Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire 24. It's Asian cinema in a podcast. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me tonight is Ken.
Good evening.
And Mike Banner.
Hello.
Please sound a bit happier, Mike.
Hello!
Bored out of his mind. Already.
There we go.
I'm just with focused. That.
starting grids, starting blocks.
With that slightly amusing introduction, we'll go right into our last movies watched. Mike, since you seem so chirpy.
Okay, well, I'm going to review Shaw Brothers again. What a surprise. But because I've been really busy the last week or so, after going through a big run of watching pretty much a film a night, I haven't actually watched anything, so I'm going to go back to a film I watched a few weeks ago called Young Vagabond. Now, this is from the late Shaw Brothers period, so it'd be 85, which is just when that was the last year of any real significant number of Shaw Brothers films being produced. After that, anything else that plopped out tended to be kind of distributed by Shaw Brothers or something, but not actually produced by them.
Or co-productions.
Yeah. Although I did read something that was quite interesting that suggested that they'd actually stopped filming in 1983. But because of obviously their schedule was so prolific, that they had plenty of films to go within a batch in 84 and 85 before they shut up shop. So this one's stars Gordon Liu as Beggar Sue, who's another famous historical character, kind of a. I believe he's one of the 10 tigers of Guangdong, along with, you know, Wang Feihong and other such famous historical figures. I think Simon Yun has played him a few times in some of the Sammo films. I think he was Beggar Sue in Magnificent Butcher, if I remember rightly. Anybody remember
that? No, he was supposed to be in that, but he died during production. So that was Fan Mei Sheng in Magnificent Butcher, and but it was the character ever named in Snake and Eagle Shadow as Beggar Sue, or was that only in Drunken Master?
Might just be Drunken Master.
Yeah, it was the same type of a character design, though. In
Yeah.
Simon Yun played the same character virtually in every film, didn't he? But
from that point on.
I'm pretty sure he was actually known as Beggar Sue in a few, at least. But yeah, this is kind of like the like an origin story, if you will, kind of in comic book style. So you see Gordon Liu becoming the beggar. It also stars Wong Yu, not Jimmy, but the Lao Gar Lung protege from
One Armed. No,
from Spiritual Boxer and stuff.
And the late Wong Yu, I should say, he died a few months ago, I think.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people will. I think he's a. The phrase in Britain would be he's a bit of a Marmite kind of actor. You either love him or hate him. I think he annoys quite a few people because he's usually a comedy character. A lot of mugging and stuff going on, but I was actually a big fan of his still. And then we've got Jason Pugh, who obviously we spoke about in Bloody Parrot, who was all over these late Shaw Brothers films. Wang Lung Wei, the awesome Wang Lung Wei, and Ku Fung is obviously my favourite actor in Shaw Brothers ever. So I mean, it's already getting off to a good start with a really great cast list. But oh yeah, I was going to mention as well the director and the action choreographer are the same two who were behind New Tales of the Flying Fox, which is also a late Shaw Brothers film. So if you've seen that, that gives you a kind of idea of the action in it. And which is, I think, is really good action. I think it's New Wave. It's pointing towards New Wave a lot of the time. There's quite a bit of wires in it, and a good mix of weapons and fists and stuff, and especially New Tales of the Flying Box. Some kind of comedy fight scenes and more serious stuff, but it gets the balance really right, I think. because personally, I'm not a fan of a lot of the New Wave stuff where it felt, I don't know, it lacked kind of, it wasn't a fight anymore. It lacked a lot of impact and a lot of kind of earthiness. It tended to be a lot of flying around, spinning, and doing things to look good and to look beautiful on camera, and not necessarily to make a good fight. But I think these last few films these guys directed have really got the action down well. So it's about Beggar Sue and his brother. Beggar Sue is a bit of a drunkard, and he doesn't get on with his stepmom. And so there's lots of kind of comedy goings on between him and his brother at school and all kinds of things like that, and a few fights that break out, arguments over girls. And then they end up moving to a kind of school that teaches English because their dad wants them to learn English to get into business and everything. But after a fight breaks out with other students that they're getting picked on, that kind of thing, that kind of predictable stuff. Gordon Liu takes the fall all heroically and gets all the blame and has to leave the school, whereas Wong Yu stays. But it turns out that, yeah, so it's a bit of a stroke of luck for him, because it turns out his teacher is actually a kung fu master in hiding, because he used to be a robber, but he changed his ways, and so to hide out from his former partners who'd be itching to kill him, he hides his skills. But when Gordon gives him some wine, because Gordon's family's famous for making the best wine in town, he basically gets shit-faced and drops the drunken tiger stylings, which Gordon learns and begs him to be his teacher. And you know, predictably, you know somebody's gonna die. Revenge, big final action. Ku Feng rolls in halfway point as some kind of comedy relief for Gordon to spark up a nice bit of banter with. Bit of tragedy. I mean, it reminds me of Crazy Shaolin Disciples.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if either of you have seen that.
Yeah.
Heard of it. It's also late Shaw Brothers production period, isn't it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also got Gordon in it, and
Chin Su Ho.
Yeah, and Lo Mung's in it as well. Yeah, that film's absolute bollocks. Because it's packed full of comedy, meandering, pointless comedy, which is not at all funny. And it just drags horribly.
Mm-hmm.
But what reminds me of is like this film, it kind of has that kind of plot not really going anywhere, moving from one set piece to the next. Whereas in Young Vagabond, the set pieces are funny, and the characters are really likeable, and it's got fine performances and some good action. And it's the end, it's the way, it's all comedy until the last like 10 minutes where it totally switches on you and becomes really dark and violent, just for that last showdown, which is exactly what happens in Crazy Shaolin Disciples and happens in Young Vagabond as well. And both end, well, Young Vagabond finishes on a really shocking bit of violence as its last shot, whereas Crazy Shaolin Disciples has a shocking bit of violence
mm-hmm.
in the during the final fight, if you remember what that is, Stu.
Yeah.
Can I just ask one thing? Is it like Chang Che-esque final real violence without spoiling anything? Was it worse, more extreme than that?
It's not like lots of bloodletting like Chang Che or, you know, that kind of thing. It's more like just a moment that pops up where it makes you go, holy shitballs. That you just weren't
exactly
expecting.
Those words.
I think you will say holy shitballs if you watch it. It's just one of those kind of quality Hong Kong cinema moments where you're like, did he really just do that? I actually had to stop Crazy Shaolin Disciples, rewind it and watch it again just to go, no, I can't believe I just saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Young Vagabond's not quite like that. It's just the way it finishes on this shot. It's just mental, considering the other like 70 minutes of the film is a nice is a nice kind of action comedy with a some kind of dark undertone subplots going on, and then it just switches up on you at the end. But I think Young Vagabond hasn't got a lot of great reviews, and it hasn't got a lot of love from the fans, I don't think. In fact, I think a lot of the later films, the last films, don't get a lot of love. But I think it's a great film. It's rocketing up into one of my favourite Shaw Brothers films. I'm going to have to watch it again just to make doubly sure. But yes, excellent film. Thorough recommendation for that one.
So this week I saw a new movie called Yes, I Can See Dead People. It really doesn't inspire you at all. I'll let you in on a little secret, although it's not that exciting. I usually let other sites take the fall for me first, i.e. I let sites like lovehkfilm.com review certain movies first, and if they give a sort of a semi-good review, because I usually think along the same lines of them, I'll go for a certain movie, and particularly if I feel like reviewing it, giving it a big review. And Yes, I Can See Dead People was one of those. Teen horror flick. Yes, it is about a character played by Stephen Chung from One Half of the Boys. It's very important to note. The other one is called Kenny Kwan, I believe. Don't know anything about them, don't care. And there's no other really notable cast in the main leads, but he has a gift which is established in the beginning of the film, that he can see dead people, and he sort of deals with it in a casual way, because he likes to hang out with his friends and give them burn them stuff for the afterworld, and when he sees gory things, worse things, more evil things, he sort of turns his back. But he really needs to step up, as it turns out, because his brother arrives home from a little mini weekend vacation and seems strange, seems possessed by something, and they need to find out what is happening, because it's slowly taking him over. And the key is actually he's stolen a certain object that a spirit that is not yet resting properly, that's that spirit's a particular object. So they go after his brother, and because it's a teen horror, you don't expect anything really substantial to happen or it to be scary. And for half of the flick, it's this debut director David Lee, he sort of shoots a nice looking movie and whatnot, and he's professional, and but it seems like the usual scare tactics, the old fashioned ones, they are used so frequently that it doesn't really make you think anything. It's just like, look at me, I can do 100 scare tactics via sound and quick cut editing stuff. But after like half the flick, that they start to develop the story a little more. They make it about more spirits and more objects, and it seems like he finds a flow, this new director. It's by amping the intensity of the scares, meaning that they're more tight, rather than one every minute, it's like one every 10 seconds in certain scenes. It reaches a compelling terror level in a way. And he uses style quite good in flashbacks. Just like, it seems forced, but he uses like green filters for flashbacks and black and white and step printing and all that. But the key is to involve more characters, and it even becomes like not emotional on the best drama level ever, but the way this family gets torn apart by the spirits, and there's no question that the spirits involved, it turns emotional at points. And the end tally of Yes, I Can See Dead People is that it's surprisingly involving and entertaining for half a flick, which is not a bad thing though. And maybe if you watch it again, which I'm sure I will, maybe the first half will seem more bearable. But one thing I noticed, though, I don't know if it's a fault of DVD or not, but during this first half, where things are sort of, automatic scares that are not scary at all, it seems like the film is almost too dark. There's a scene where a scary little kid, not a long-haired long-haired girl but a scary little kid is sitting under a dinner table. But you can't see. It is in the shadows, but it's not really supposed to be in the shadows. You're supposed to see something. And it's not even that the DVD is wrongly timed on brightness level and stuff, but it seemed like they just missed this in the cinematography. It seemed like they made it too dark. That aspect gets better as the second half comes along. So it's like a rookie. It's like a rookie with good intentions. He has good intentions, David Lee, and he kind of loves the genre. It's not a director who's, you know, looking for a simple thing to do. He shows enough sincerity, and yes, I can see dead people. I mean, it's probably cheap enough to pick up the DVD, and it's not too bad.
No.
So it was made this year, or released this year rather. So it's a very new film, and Stephen Chung, the teen pop idol, he does okay for himself. Not something that you see, ooh, in 5 years he's going to be the next Eason Chan or Andy Lau. It's not kind of that kind of development.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, the end.
Okay. See. For me this week I watched Blood Brothers, the 2007 Alexei Tan action drama with a rating of 5.2 on IMDb. My hopes for this movie were stifled before watching it, but obviously after getting through it, it was strange because it only kind of had a shorter running time than I would expect for sort of it. I think it was under my impression it had sort of an arty feel to it, or that's what all like the stills that were published online gave you the impression of. There are all these black and white shots, sort of, basically.
Like a Wong Kar-wai film.
Yeah. They had all these still shots where each picture looked dramatic. They're trying to get across this message, and it's like, oh, great, 2.5 hours of nothing.
And there is the, what is the setting? Is it 20s or 30s?
The 20s, 1920s.
Because the elegance in those kind of pictures sort of may reveal that also that is a 2-hour fashion showcase as well.
mm-hmm. Aye, the thing is, like, the settings and the costumes in the movie were great, like, as well as the cast of Daniel Wu, Xu Ke, Yi Liu, and Song Hong Lei, who's, like, kind of appearing up everywhere recently with him starring in Mongol, as well as Triangle.
Is it Chang Chen? Is that as well? Blood Brothers?
There's actually quite a lot of big mainland actors in it. Well, big towards me, who has a very limited...
He's actually Taiwanese, I believe, though, but no matter.
Aye, see, it's that limited.
Well, as I said, it don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the story is basically of three friends who travel from a small village in mainland China to Shanghai to make their fortune, but then they get caught up in like the gangster lifestyle and it soon becomes do or die. That's it, really.
Sounds like a similar plot line from some movie it might be based on.
Yeah, strangely enough. But if this movie does get an international release, I highly suggest everyone to rent it. It might not be worth buying, because it seemed to be, from the looks of it, like, great costumes, the setting was all, everything looked legit. The only thing that came across really weird, the thing that took me out of the experience, was the sound effects. The sound effects in this movie were really dated. Like, gunshots sounded like they were coming from like a film that was made 20 years ago. It was just sort of those things where you'd kind of just raise an eyebrow going, that seems odd. This is sort of the film where you'd expect like something like sound effects you would get in, well, say a bigger budget film. It'd be something like a gunshot would make like a more of a shocking sound to it, not like this, like it's just came out of a library.
Maybe a strange artistic choice that didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's like the gunfire from Dirty Harry films.
Don't remember those.
Awesome, just awesome.
Like 20 years ago, that's like you can just take them from like an old Hong Kong movie.
Yeah, probably just
at that time they've been shooting guns in several movies for quite a time.
Another film I've managed to see recently, just over the weekend, was Forbidden Kingdom. Now, I think we've all spoke enough about this one, but all I have to say is just I highly recommend the film. It was really good.
Cinema?
Yep. Cool. Mm-hmm. A really good film. More surprising, well, a lot better than I think all of us had actually expected when we were going to see it. Some really out of nowhere, like, laughs.
What do you think of the action then?
It was quite good. The fights between Jet Li and Colin Chow were top. Even like Jackie getting to fight Fan Bingbing at the end, that was pretty good as well.
Cool, Colin Chow in yet another Hollywood movie.
Mm-hmm.
So the bigger part than in The Matrix?
Yeah.
Well, just in general, how did the cinema audience react to what apparently is like a lot more of a Hong Kong movie than we expected? I mean, for a prolonged fight between people, at least Jackie mm-hmm. or Jet, did the audience react like... Because that's always a thing. You know, with mm-hmm. American movies, it seems like they need to keep it short and sweet because people don't have the attention span to watch like a 4 or 5 minute fight or whatever.
Yeah, well, let's see. With the way our cinema is set out, they basically kind of butchered it by hardly showing it. For the amount of times Forbidden Kingdom got shown, I think it was 5 times that day, but films like Hancock was getting 12 times that day. So it was based around about a crowd of 20 people, including me and 3 of my friends going to see the film. So everyone was kind of pretty much spread out, but I thought at one point someone did walk out, but it was probably about half an hour before they came back.
I've never done that. Anyway, walked out.
Mm-hmm. I've never.
To be honest, I've never. Mm-hmm. But I guess I played.
For the amount we have to pay for these movies, I'll take my 2 hours.
Cinema prices are fucking expensive, so I'm sitting here.
Mm-hmm. I'll pay
and
for
it better
seat.
Be 3 hours long.
Those costumes better be bro. But yeah, from the looks of it, no one walked out, and all they laughed at the right parts. Right, so we're going on to... We've mixed things up a little with our interview today, so we've got the band segment right now. So, to sort of recap, my band segment started back in, I think, late February. It was late February on Puff 13 when it was me, Mike Banner and Scott Napier. A list of 45 movies was brought forwards, and 132 days later, the ban list was completed after I finished watching Blood Brothers.
Hooray!
I hope that's hands.
Golf applause.
Yes.
it's not me masturbating the background applause.
I'm really happy for you! Really! Yep, so it's over and done with. Now I just have to decide what films I want to buy now.
Are you stumped? Like,
yeah. Let's see.
What's it like? How do you do it?
Because I finished Blood Brothers last week, at the start of last week, and since then I kind of picked up a couple like DVDs downtown, but there's nothing on Asian cinema. I'm kind of just... I don't know, I'm kind of waiting until I have a list of films so I can just buy in bulk. And there's films I want to catch up on, like CJ7. And...
It's not getting a UK release, by the way. Cinema.
It should be. It's,
I thought it had its UK release, because it kept getting changed about, then I thought it was just basically London was getting it.
Oh, I don't know. It's been passed by the BBFC for theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
So unless a company was planning at least playing it in a few cinemas,
yeah,
it wouldn't get that at all. So it's obviously going to hit a few cinemas somewhere. Mm. And not an English dub either. It's going to be in Canto.
Mm. Well, the American DVD.
Maybe Mandarin though.
Pardon?
Maybe Mandarin though. There's been like talks of the actual track that Stephen Chow insisted on being the original. It's actually Mandarin, even though himself, you know, is overdubbed on Cantonese, and a few other people are speaking Cantonese. Apparently, it seems like it should be more of a Mandarin flick. But though, even though it's better though, if you only Hong Kong DVD, you can switch between if you like.
Yeah. Well, the controversy,
so-called controversy on the forums about that.
Well, the one that was reviewed for the BBFC was Encanto.
It's going to be a partially dubbed film anyway. I don't think it matters. And obviously, Stephen Chow is either sing sound on Cantonese or dubbing himself in Cantonese. So.
I thought it was interesting, though, because, I mean, I haven't seen it yet. Because, well, I saw the trailer and I wasn't that enamoured with it, to be honest. But I'll still watch it because it's Stephen Chow. But it seems like a family film to me, a kid's film.
Yeah, I think it's based more on the kid, and Stephen Chow is more of a supporting actor towards it.
That's why I was quite surprised that it's not dubbed. It's aiming at, you know, families and kids. I can't see that many kids watching a subtitle film.
Yeah, they were talking about that American reviewers, that it was either that or it was like a low rating but a bit too violent for kids. It was something along the lines of that, that it seems so family friendly that the actual release is not. And it might have been though that the fact that it was subtitled and no option was given to cinema goers to go and see a dubbed version.
Mm-hmm.
Another screening room.
And what's it? The American DVD is due out next month, the 12th of August.
And that was the reason for controversy, because they only announced the Mandarin track and some people wanted both to be able to switch between them. Blah blah.
But other than that, I think I'm looking forward to now is the Pie Dog. The director was a Derek Kwok.
Sir.
Yep. I'm looking forward to. I'm gonna pick up a copy of the Pie Dog and his new film, The Moss.
Yeah, I'm doing that as well. Got a new movie out really quickly, Derek. Got fairly good reviews, and I have to mention as an aside though, I'm beginning to like the working habits and methods of Sean Yu.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be in a lot of movies and taking himself very seriously after a few years of, you know, dopey movies here and there. So Sean Yu might be, I always kind of liked him. I thought he was good in like Just One Look.
Mm-hmm.
And I like these youngsters that they put in effort, and you do notice that they mean what they're doing. I mean, it's not a surefire hit, but most, and it probably wasn't a hit because I never noticed its cinema release, and all of a sudden, boom, DVD.
Mm-hmm. There's also another Sean Yu film, which I think the reason I looked up was because there was an Eakin Cheng film about. This one included ghosts. Like, Eakin was a ghost, and Sean Yu was able to see the ghosts.
Another one.
Mm-hmm. It was done by a Taiwanese director, and I've never heard anything else of it, but I think it was getting a cinema release in March.
Yes, I can see Eakin Cheng's Ghost. Is the English title of it?
Ah.
Nah, I'm just...
You think I would... Come on.
Were you convinced? Ah, that was good. Oh.
I'm holding my tongue, sir.
As an aside, what's the countdown until the Storm Rider sequel opens?
I have not a clue. I know it's going under the title of Storm Warriors now. But all I know is was they were filming it. Aaron Kwok got injured on set, and that's it.
Probably slipped a disc. He's about 50, isn't he?
No, I think it was a sword fight and it got caught in the head.
Fuck Aaron Lau. Aaron Kwok isn't that old though. 40.
I don't know.
Whatever year it is in cyborg year terms.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fucking cyborg as well, Aaron Kwok.
Clearly one that wasn't programmed with any sartorial
careful
taste.
Careful now.
Aaron Kwok just wears some of the craziest outfits I've ever seen.
He's very flamboyant indeed. He has no shame.
Yeah, some of those concert photos are...
I like that. I think that, you know, it's not like, maybe it's an Asian thing. Maybe it's the fashion over there. I don't know shit about that. No, it's an Aaron Kwok thing. And he loves it.
Yeah, I've seen some class pictures. I have to put a few on the... Puff site.
An Aaron Kwok love, that's me. That should be a more fun photo gallery than a Donnie Yen photo gallery.
You'll laugh more than drool.
Yeah, you see, it won't be as funny as the Donnie one. How can you beat Donnie go shopping with his shirt off? That's
well,
a
bad, Aaron Kwok could probably do the same, but in a silver jumpsuit.
Well, keep chatting. I'm looking for the Aaron Kwok silver jumpsuit
like,
go shopping.
It's like some weird checkered golf pants. Go along with that. Bright red boots. I don't know.
And like just a rainbow striped umbrella.
But to pay respect, I think Aaron Kwok has turned into a fine actor. Mm. I mean, after this, our exile. No flamboyant Aaron Kwok there. That's a bona fide loser. Unshaven loser. Hopefully the hours. And it's a splendid place.
Storm Riders was good too.
I've not seen Storm Riders. is that contract?
Joining us, our very first POF interview is with Brit Kicker Chris Jones. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be on with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully my connection will stay good and you'll not lose me at any point. If you do, I'm sorry, I'm on a wireless laptop, so if I disappear, that's why.
Okay, it shouldn't be a problem. Cool. So, our first question, Martin from our forum asks, in regards to Blood, the Last Vampire, how was it working with Corey Yoon? We want the details and on-set gossip.
Well, I can help you out with the first part. I can. Obviously, yeah, working with Corey was just a fantastic experience. I remember the first night we were on set. You know, thinking, wow, you know, I'm stood opposite Corey Yoon. It was one of the things that I'd always dreamed of doing back when I was watching, you know, him in movies and then later on directing movies. That one day, you know, I'd be working on a set with him, and I was very, very lucky to have the opportunity to do that last year. You know, quickly forgot that, you know, it was hammering down with rain and it was 3 o'clock in the morning. It didn't seem to matter, you know, because I'd achieved my goal. It was a fantastic experience. I mean, I was lucky enough on one of the particular shoots to, you know, to be directed with him one-on-one, which was brilliant, and it was very, very rewarding at the end of it for him, you know, to turn around and say that he was happy. It was only a very simple thumbs up, but you know, that was enough for me. You know, I felt you know, I've achieved what I've set out for. So now I can retire and just get a normal job. No. So yeah, I mean, with regards to on-set gossip, obviously I've got to be really careful with that sort of thing, because I mean this movie was my first big, you know, Asian production, and I wouldn't want to go and screw it up my first job by letting things slip, because I mean obviously that, you know, has happened to people in the past. They've shared a little bit too much, and it's got them in trouble. What I can say though, obviously, is it was a fantastic shoot, and it, you know, there was every day we were on there. I think we were on there for about 10 or 12 days shoot. And every night was action. You know, it was all go. You know, it was a massive scene that we were in. You know, and there were stunt guys everywhere, falling over and flying through things and flying through the air. And you know, we had weapons as such. You know, it was really cool. So you know, I've no doubt it's going to be quite an explosive scene. Quite interesting. Put it that way.
Great.
Whereabouts did you shoot?
It was in China. It was in a place called Dali, which was a beautiful, beautiful location. It was a pretty much a tourist area, but it had all been, the area had been made to look very traditional. I mean, there were certain areas there that obviously had been kept preserved, but there were other areas that had kind of been built up to look similar. But it was just like one huge set everywhere you walked, and there were people, you know, living in the buildings that they were using for the films when they weren't shooting. Really, really awesome place to go look around. so remote. I mean, we were very, very, very lucky that we were staying in a really lush 5-star hotel. You know, but round the corner, there were people still coming out and like they're washing their clothes in the waterways that they have coming down from the snow on the mountains. It was a brilliant, brilliant area to be in. And there's some of the fantastic experiences I was doing. You know, I was lucky enough to be working with Jude Poyer at the time. And we went out for a walk around with one of the other stunt guys, Andy and Cyrus, to get some food. And, you know, we went into restaurants and none of us speaking Mandarin. No, we could do yes, no, thank you, things like that. And, you know, we went in to order the food and it was painted on the walls. You know, there was no menu. You had to, like, pick things from the wall. It was all painted on, hand painted on the walls. And we were just, like, pointing at things and, you know, ended up with, like, 5 bowls of rice and some sort of meat. But, yeah, it was really, you know, things like that. We were very lucky that we were filming where we were and that it wasn't some big industrial area. It was really, really nice countryside. So I'd like to go back again just on a holiday sometime.
If anyone who doesn't know, can someone briefly say something about what the Blood the Last Vampire is about? Correct me if I'm wrong, is it based on a Japanese manga or anime?
Yes, it is, from what I know. I mean, the manga thing, it isn't really my scene, but leading up to the film, the week's notice I had leading up to it, I did a little bit of research into what the movie was, and it does seem to be a film based on an extremely popular anime film. I mean, I've looked it up on the internet, and there are serious diehard fans of this genre, so fingers crossed they get it right. You know, obviously if they do, then, you know, hey, I may get to go back and do a sequel. But it's it certainly is a very, very popular thing.
What's Corey Ewan's kind of style when directing the action?
He's very, very energetic. Very energetic. Even at his age now, I mean, I don't know how old he is exactly, but I mean, going back to when I was watching it, I mean, I'm 20, 28 now, coming up to 29, and I was watching him when I was a kid. So, you know, he's still, even at his age now, he was the most energetic, one of the most energetic crew members on set. He was, you know, where he was watching the monitors was indoors when we were outside shooting in the rain. And he was always the first one out of the door to come out and, you know, say well done or to make changes. And, you know, he was on the go constantly. One of the shots in particular, he was operating the camera. And he, you know, he was running around, you know, with the camera running into us. And, you know, and at one point it did all get very heated. And, you know, everybody was bumping and things. And, you know, he was having a laugh and joining in. And, you know, he's still giving it 110% even now, which was really impressive. And I remember one of the, you know, memories that I take away from it was every morning when we finished, because we generally finish shooting most of the mornings around 7 o'clock when we went back to the hotel, and he was always still on the go. He was like one of the last people to finish. I remember one particular night we finished quite late into it. I think we did about 14 hours maybe, and everybody else was going back to sleep, and I had to go to speak to one of the production team, and he was editing. He'd gone straight from the shoot into a room, and he was editing the footage from that night. So, you know, the guy must live off caffeine, so I don't know, but he was fantastic, an inspiration.
Great.
Was he really specific about what he wanted? Did he got it all mapped out, or does he kind of adapt or listen to his stuntmen or other?
Yeah, it seemed to be that obviously certain elements, because I mean we were very lucky to be involved in. From my experience, it was quite a large scale fight. There were a lot of people in there. There were extras mixed in with stunt guys. I mean, there were easily 20, 25, you know, other stunt guys that were local, as well as Western guys that were there. And it was, I mean, obviously some of it had to be planned, but they were making, from what I could see and from what I can make out, they were making changes on set. And it was always with good reason. It wasn't just for the sake of it. And but they were working so quick. You all hear how fast these crews work, and I'd heard it, you know, loads of times, and I wasn't ready for how quick they work. Their turnaround time is just unbelievable. Then, okay, we've done this stunt, okay, clear up, move, you know, get ready, next one now, and it's just so intense. And, you know, thankfully, I do a lot of training, and you know, I needed it. It was physically one of the most demanding jobs I've ever had to do. purely because of the turnaround time and everything. It was just so fast, so unbelievably quick.
Does this all mean that I haven't read up on the film, but is Corey Young the main director and or the stunt director?
I honestly don't know how it's going to be credited.
If we look at the Transporter, that was the thing. They had a main credit for Corey Young on Transporter and an artistic directing credit for the French fellow Louis.
Yeah, I think it would be a similar sort of thing. I mean, we were working. I mean, I worked mainly on one unit that was doing all the action, and you know, Corey was doing all the action. He was there every day for every single shoot, and he was in charge. So he was very much the director. And the one night I did with the other units, Corey wasn't there for that, and it was basically, you know, dialogue. There was a little bit of action, but there was a lot more, you know, dialogue scene and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he did work very, very hard, so I hope he does get credited, you know, duly. So we'll see.
Yeah, so maybe the combined people here can answer this question, because I myself, being a Swede, don't know anything about it. But what have we seen from British martial arts cinema? Will there be something to be seen, or is it more like an indie or underground movement currently? Because I see movies coming out now and then.
Yeah, it's if I'm honest, it's quite a volatile industry over here, to be honest. It comes and goes in waves. You know, there can be years where everybody seems to be doing something. You know, everybody and their neighbours making a martial arts film, and then there can be years like this year where there's been very little happening. I think a lot of the problems over here is it can be the British attitude that does get in the way a little bit, in that we can take ourselves a little bit too seriously. And, you know, obviously the martial arts and the action industry over here isn't huge. It's not our forte as such. And when some of these smaller companies do come around to wanting to make these movies, they can take it a little bit too seriously, if you know what I mean. And it does hinder things. Whereas I've worked on some lower budget movies abroad, and they're so much more laid back and relaxed. Obviously keeping things professional, but everything goes along a lot more smoothly. It's kind of like that's not my job. I'm not doing that attitude, as opposed to seeing something needs doing and getting on and doing it. I remember working on something, a short film a couple of years ago, a boxing short film, and I turned up early because I like to be prompt. And they were having trouble rigging the lights, so I climbed up and helped them rig the lights, and they were like, you know, what are you doing? You know, I just thought I'd help out. I was here, and they're like, oh, that's cool. You know, whilst everybody else is just kind of around, stood looking, going, well, it's not my job, I'm not joining in. I mean, not all the sets are like that, but from my experience of some of the more difficult shoots, that can often be the case. That's not just, you know, I'm not trying to typecast and label every action, you know, production over here being like that. But I think, you know, if people could remember sometimes that it's a low budget, smaller production, and treat it that way, rather than pretending to make Mission Impossible 4 or something. But hopefully things are on the up. I mean, you know, you've got films like Ten Dead Men and The Silencer, and they're, you know, they're getting showings. You know, you're getting screenwriters recently, but it's just this weekend in Swindon at a film festival, and, you know, we had Ten Dead Men and The Silencer showing. So, you know, there are people out there making an effort. They just need support now, and people go out and buy the DVDs. And you know, go into them with an open mind, remembering that these are, you know, low-budget productions. Don't expect, you know, mm-hmm. a new Police Story or something. You know, they're not going to be to that level, but, you know, these guys need support. I mean, you look at people like, you know, Isaac Florentine and people like that. You know, they all started somewhere, and you know, and then went built up from that point. And, you know, you've got like Steve Ross and Simon Wyndham, Ross Boyce, people like this. They've got to start somewhere and go up from there. You know, one day there'll be cult movies that people go, oh yeah, that's so cool. You know, so.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there'll be a point where there will be a mainstream British martial arts film?
It's difficult to say. I mean, you would think. I mean, your logic would say no, because it's not what we do. But who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I mean, you look at the amount of action-based productions that are coming out of like France and places like this now. You know. You know, it wouldn't be something that dreamt of doing, but nowadays it's commonplace. So, who knows? You may get bored of making period dramas one day and just want to make violent actionists, you know?
Maybe a possibility, possibility of co-productions in the future.
Yeah,
maybe
possibly.
That's the hope.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely an upsurge, a movement of British action indie movies now, more so than there were, say, 7 or 8 years ago, which is great for people like me because it keeps me in practice. I love to get involved with these productions. A lot of people get to a certain point in their career and decide that they don't want to do it anymore because they see it as maybe as being a backwards step. But, you know, all of these people, well, not necessarily all of them, but a lot of these people are at some point going to go further with their career and become maybe the next big thing or, you know, and if you're not involved with these productions and if you're not working with these people, they've got no opportunity to see what you can do to then bring you back on something else. So, and I enjoy it as well. I mean, I really do enjoy getting involved on these lower budget productions because they're fun. They're fun to do.
Okay, forum regular, Pants on Fire.
That's a cool name.
You could, I'm sure you'd be pleased to hear that. If you could choose to have played any role in any film, what would it have been?
Wow, jeez. Have you got an hour?
Maybe we could narrow it to it. Oh, go on. Sorry.
Do you know what I'm going to say? Right, this is going back because, geez, if anybody that's on my Facebook will have seen the video I put on there. I think I showed Stuart, actually. It's like my DVD and video collection. It's like I got that. I've kind of outgrown the space now that I've been like moved under the stairs. My girlfriend has like banished me to the under the stairs. So I've got like my computer and everything under the stairs with my videos and DVDs. I'm massive film collector and things like that. And the films I always look back as being my favourite were the original films I watched as a kid and as a teen. You know, back when I was really into my training when I first started out. And I'd have to say that I'd have to be Marta Kaskos in Drive because that is the movie really that caught my imagination the most in the 90s because. It's just like, you know, check this guy out, you know, in an American movie, you know, doing all these cool moves. And that is who, you know, as well as, you know, Jackie and Samuel and the other people is, you know, I saw Mark Dacascos and thought, cool, you know, I want to go and do all those moves. So I was like throwing myself around the gym trying to copy the moves and things and not knowing, obviously, that the amount of doubling that was going off at the time. But I was throwing myself around the room trying to do all those moves. And, you know, I always thought, I even now watch it, you know, how cool would it be to be in that movie. I don't know why. I think it just goes back to it being a favourite as a youngster.
Mm-hmm. Well, that movie stands up still.
It's
like the finest example of an American production doing doing Hong Kong action, even though it was a Japanese team who choreographed it. But it's amazing still.
It is. It is. It is in some respects what Rush Hour could have been. It was, you know, I mean, I think that's mentioned on the commentary. You know, that Brett Ratner had seen the movie and said, you know, wow, I'm glad this didn't come out of the cinema because I want to make this. I want to make this film called Rush Hour. So it is. It is still an awesome film. And I watched it recently. You know, I'll go through. I'll have like a gap, and then I'll just have to take the DVD out and watch it. Because it's just one of those, movies. It's like, you know, it's like Drunken Master 2 and movies like that you just kind of every now and again just pull them out and watch them because they're just awesome.
Is anyone following the development of what's the director Steve Wang? Is that it?
Yeah.
Has he done anything else since then?
Yeah, I believe so. I must openly admit that I generally don't follow movies by directors as such. I just say, well, that's a cool trailer, I'll watch that film. I mean, obviously now more so when I've got into the industry and stuff, I do take note. But yeah, he has gone to do other things as well. That's what Internet Movie Database is for. Go on there and go on there and look at your movies and then get on Amazon.
It always whenever I watch it always makes me think, why wasn't Mark Dacascos more of a star?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It does seem a waste, and I mean, obviously he has had the opportunities, and I don't feel that it's always been his fault that it's not. I'm not suggesting at any time it was his fault, but you know, looking at some of the movies, it's like, wow, you had Mark Dacascos and you really did waste him. I'm sure you've all got films to mind. you know, but you look at him like fighting Sammo in Martial Law. That was cool. You know, if that had been in a movie, or you know, that'd been awesome. You know, but you, unfortunately, you do get these with people that just miss the boat as such. I mean, that guy's still got time, I suppose. I mean, you never know.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of Fan Siu Wong in that respect. Somebody who think, you know, he's got a lot of talent and a bit of charisma going on and stuff as well, but just never seems to find the roles or misses out somehow.
Yeah, it's it is very, very tough like that. I mean, you get people. I mean, you know, Tony Jaa, for instance, could have, you know, he could have been no one. He got lucky in the respect that he got on this film long back, and everybody was like, wow, you know, check this guy out on here. Next thing, you know, he's dynamite. Everybody wants to see any film with Tony Jaa, and it doesn't even have to be a good film. People just go out and buy it, you know, in the same respect as people like Jackie, and that. It just takes that one film, that one opportunity, and you're off.
But you know, the thing that Tony had in his favour is obviously he was, at that point, I think people were itching for that kind of 80s Hong Kong hard, you know, realistic type of action, and nobody was really delivering it. Obviously Jackie being in America, Jet Li doing a lot of new wave type stuff.
For sure. But yeah, I hope the guy, I mean, I'm sure he's very much happy with his career and where he is. I know I certainly would be if I'd achieved the things that Mark had achieved. I know I could only hope to be as successful as that.
Well, he had a Brotherhood of the Wolf a few years ago, didn't he?
Yes, yeah.
I haven't seen that yet, but I know a lot of people.
You haven't seen it? I know, you've got to watch that. That's a good. That he does stand out. He does stand out. I won't spoil it by saying anything I was about to say. So I won't spoil anything by saying it. I think to a certain extent, maybe he could have been used a little bit more in that movie as well. But what he does do is very, very good. Very good, in my opinion.
Right, question 4. Maren asks us, which of the low-budget Brit flicks that you've made have been your favourite?
Wow. I'd probably have to say, and this does sound like I'm showing favouritism here when I say this, but I have to say The Silencer, purely because Steve Lawson and Sam Lundin, the directors, gave me the opportunity to have some lines, which they were taking a massive gamble on, really, because I'm not an actor, you know, I've not had any training in any way at all, you know. Obviously I'm still actively teaching, I'm a full-time instructor, so you could say that I'm acting on a daily basis, because I'm obviously studying in front of kids as young as 5 right the way through to adults, and you know, each and every day, whether I've got a cold, a sprayed ankle, whatever, you know, I've got to be jolly and happy. I can't walk in and be grumpy, because then obviously you're going to lose students from a business point of view. But yeah, these guys gave me the opportunity to have some basic lines, and you know, looking at it, I could have done better. I'm always thinking that way, but I like to think it's passable, and from that respect, that has to be my favourite, because you know, unfortunately I couldn't do as much action as was planned, because I'd had quite a bad injury at the time. I'd torn a muscle in my leg, and we had to cut back on the action, but maybe in some respects that might have been a good thing, because I had to alter my approach to the film, and you know, I had to change my character a little bit. I don't know whether the character's name is Chris, and I don't know whether they did that because they think I'm a bit slow and I wouldn't be able to follow the script. It's not a question I've asked them. That'd have to be my favourite. That'd have to be my favourite for sure. Go and watch it. You can buy it, actually. Go and buy it. Everyone go and buy it on Amazon so that they can get enough money to buy and make another film.
Right, see? This is Chris's warning. Well, not warning. Suggestion.
Yeah, go and buy it or I'm going to come and kill you. That's the way of doing it, isn't it?
Now, that's...
Yes.
I remember the name Steve Lawson from these old like Eastern Heroes video magazines, where they had home video martial arts shorts. I distinctly remember that name. I believe this was like the beginning of the 90s, mid-90s maybe. And, you know, that's a development, apparently.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. That's the same guy. He's...
Still lost.
He's such... Oh, my word. I lost count of how many short films I made with Steve. But it was really, really good because, you know, he was always open to the idea. You know, he was, oh, yeah, you know, come round to my house and we'll go out and spend the afternoon shooting a short film. And, he very rarely ever said no when I had these ideas, which is really cool because I knew I had some professional to work with, you know, with decent gear and he knew what he was doing. And, you know, we made short film after short film after short film and I used it all as showreel footage to eventually get other jobs. So, you know, I do have to thank him a lot for that. He's so dedicated, you know. And, you know, we started off with a movie called Insiders, which was, mm-hmm. I think it was about an hour long. And, you know, they made it on nothing. You know, I know that they have contracts and they can't state the budgets and things, but, I mean, you know, these guys made it on nothing. You know, literally, they were begging, borrowing, stealing to make these films. And, you know, Steve would, you know, like, redecorate his living room for the scenes. So, you know, they needed a jail cell scene, so they'd literally take the wallpaper, strip the wallpaper, put new wallpaper up, repaint it, dress it. Okay, now it needs to be a living room again, so they'd wallpaper it again and everything. And they did it all themselves. You know, and this poor guy had to live in this house that was ripped to shreds for the sake of making his movie. But that is the dedication and level of commitment that he wanted to put into it.
Yeah, I was just thinking, do you know if you yourself are in any of these short films that ended up on the Eastern Heroes tapes?
I don't think so. I think I started doing them a little bit too late on. Right. It was well after. I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe. Who knows?
yeah. That name popped up like 4 or 5 times between the two volumes that they did Eastern Heroes, these video magazines.
The first thing I did for Steve was, I think it was back in 2001, maybe 2000. It was when Jonathan Ross was doing this late night TV series on, you know, martial arts movies, and mm-hmm. and we recorded something for that actually, I mean, I know it's times past now, so I'm probably allowed to say this, but I believe it got rejected for being too good. Not that I'm saying anything that was shown on there wasn't up to scratch, but I believe, you know, we did put a lot of effort into it, and, you know, it was the first thing I'd ever done. So, and I remember I got cracked in the face with a stick, and the guy I was working with wasn't particularly good. I'm thankful I'm not in contact with him anymore, so he'll probably never hear this, but he he hit me in the face with a stick really hard, and we had to rewrite the whole scene, so that the reason I had a like big stick in our face all bruised was due to something that had gone on in the short that we were shooting, it wasn't used. It wasn't used apparently because it looked too professional. So,
and they didn't hand it to like a big time producer instead.
I really don't know. I mean, it was so. I mean, I know Steve was, you know, was working another job at the time as well. You know, and so was Simon, who works for Steve Woodford. So I don't know. We'll see what happens in the future. I mean, I hope the guys get to work on something, you know, that they're getting back in some funding, because it's so difficult to get it over here. And, you know, you say you're making a martial arts movie, and, you know, kind of closes all the doors straight away. Mm-hmm. It has to be like a sci-fi drama with action elements or something. Maybe it'll change. Who knows?
Yeah, Martin from the forum asks, and I guess this is the last question and the scholar-like question, so prepare yourself, Chris.
Okay.
Who would win in a kicking contest between yourself and Yu Mew?
I'll give the sensible answer. What was the question? Who would win in a kicking competition between myself and Yu Mew?
No, I think there is a sensible answer to this one, Chris.
From a performance point of view, the guy would win hands down. I mean, the guy's a legend, you know what I mean? If I'm honest, okay, I've never been a fan of his total kicking style. His flamboyant acrobatic techniques are just awesome. I mean, I was watching Right and Wrongs the other day again, just simply to watch the 540 kick at the end. And you know, that is just like cinema gold. That is just awesome. And then, you know, obviously the combinations he's done in, you know, movies like Dragons Forever and things like this. But his actual kicking style when he's doing the more should we use the term traditional kicks, I've never been a big fan. I didn't always feel they looked overly powerful on screen. I actually was always a fan more so of Jackie's kicking style, and also Sammo as well, because you know they seem to put what looked like more power into the technique, if you know what I'm saying. Kicks, they were kind of very flicky, if you know what I mean, more like jabs than actual power hits. But when he obviously did his acrobatic kicks, which was awesome, absolutely awesome, and they probably still are to this day.
The kick from Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars.
Yeah, obviously.
That is gold awesome. As well.
I mean, there is not a martial arts trickster, should we say, that's not tried that technique somewhere. I mean, his extension on those kicks is just unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. You know, his knees are locked out the whole way through. I mean, that is so difficult to do. It's unreal how difficult that is to do. The confidence he has in his ability to be able to do that is just unbelievable.
I like the laundry kung fu in Dreadnought.
Yeah. Oh dear. Yeah, that is cool. That is cool. That's another movie I was watching recently. Actually, I know it sounds like I just sit at home and watch a load of movies, but as you mentioned to Stu the other week, I had tonsillitis of all things, and I had nothing else to do than just to lay on the sofa and watch movies. And you know, Dreadnought. I watched Dreadnought, Above the Law, and Blade 2. Strangely enough, I watched Blade 2 randomly. Drunken Master 2. What else? Gambling Ghost. I'm pretty random with my film choices usually. I just kind of, which one haven't I watched for a while, and just randomly pick a movie out and watch it. Got off on one now, sorry.
That's all right.
Started rambling.
You needn't be ashamed about watching movies all day, because, you know, you're talking to us. We watch movies all the time.
But don't tell my girlfriend I watch movies all day, otherwise, you know, I tell her I work through the day. don't let her know that I actually just sit and watch films all day. That wouldn't go down very well. I just, you know, if I am watching a movie, you know, when I should be doing something else, just say, I'm just researching for work, researching for a role, you know. Use that as an excuse.
And laundry kung fu doesn't really
laundry work, kung fu. That's...
Promise, it's research.
Yeah, go do the laundry, you know. Did I actually answer the question?
Yeah, you done good.
Okay. Yeah, well, a lot of the time, if we don't like the question, we kind of feign an effort to answer it and then just go off on a mad tangent, so...
Should we look at some Aaron Kwok pictures instead, then?
Please, no.
I'm just looking for crazy Ewan Bune kicks on YouTube.
Oh, there's one clip where some individual with a lot of time on their hands, shall we say, has edited it so it loops over and over about 50 times, the kick from Right and Wrongs. It's just over.
Yeah, I think I'm watching it now.
Oh, and I think somebody actually made a comment underneath about the fact that this person had done that as well.
I was going to ask you, since we're on a kicking theme, who's your favourite kicker of all time? Because obviously there's a couple that kind of tend to get mentioned a lot, which would be John Liu, because he's got crazy flexibility.
Somebody who I often say doesn't get mentioned enough for his kicking ability was Jackie Chan back in the day. Some of his kicks were totally unique to him. You look in certain movies, like he's... I don't want to start getting too technical with specific kick phrases and stuff, but you look at his jump spin hook kick, his reverse turning kick, some people might know it, in Dragons Forever. You know, you just kind of catch a glimpse of it as he's kicking the guy when they're up on the higher level. And he looked through some of his movies, and his jump spin reverse hook is very unique to him. Nobody else does it in that way. His upper body kind of, it's like it's on a spring. And it's very... he does it in Miracles as well, the end combination. We know he's got the ropes wrapped around his ankle. Yeah, a very unique way of doing that. And then you look in... I personally feel that he was at his prime in Rumble in the Bronx. Some of his kicking techniques in there, especially the section when he's around the pool table, and he's flicking his sidekicks out and things. The guy has some really good extensions, some very good, powerful looking techniques. That was always my big thing when I was watching kickers, especially more so when I got into the performance thing. You know, nowadays is, you know, there's some people that can do very nice looking kicks, but there's very few people that can actually perform kicks that look powerful on screen, that look like if that hit you, that would hurt, you know, regardless of whether it was a movie kick as such. And I always thought Jackie was somebody that was overlooked. You know, as being the comedy kung fu guy, when his kicks, you know, were pretty solid looking, and I always admired his techniques.
It's interesting you say that, because Jackie doesn't usually get a lot of credit from many people for his kung fu ability, whether it's in, you know, modern films or his old school kung fu stuff. Obviously, people always talk about the stunts and all that kind of thing, and his directing and action direction, but he doesn't really get a lot of mention for his technique.
No. If you watch some, I mean, it's more so in his more recent movies. You know, kind of like 90s onwards, I'd say, is kicking ability, or his demonstration of his kicking ability in the movies seem to definitely go up. Looking back at some of his older movies, I mean, I don't know if it was just a thing at the time, but people didn't seem to kick very well in the 70s kung fu movies. They tended to be very kind of limp and kind of, you know, it was kind of like, oh, just throw kicking, you know. Obviously there were people that were, you know, all about kicking, but, you know, Jackie's kicks in some of the early movies were atrocious. I was talking to Steve Lawson about this actually the other day, and, you know, looking at some of his later movies, his like I said, his extension and his control was really, really top notch, really good. And, you know, going back to saying Rumble in the Bronx, that is one of my all time favourite movies, which people, you know, often look at and go, you know, you're crazy. But I think he was at his prime in that movie. And unfortunately, he had to go and break his ankle in that movie, which.
Yeah.
that was a turning point for him, in my opinion. You know, that's not talking him down, the guy's still a legend. But I think, you know, that accident was a massive turning point in his career. Because I mean, I've never broken my ankle, luckily, but I can imagine, you know, that would really hinder you and slow you down. And obviously, if you haven't got confidence in your ankle when you're doing a lot of acrobatic stuff, then, you know, it's going to really play on your mind all the time. And the poor guy couldn't just take a year out like anybody else could. You know, he was straight onto Thunderbolt, wasn't he? Within weeks, if I'm right, you know, straight onto his ankle again. You know, albeit being doubled, obviously, but he was still, you know, on his ankle being active, so, you know, he's probably got a permanently knackered ankle because of that. I said ankle about 15 times there.
At least someone was keeping count.
Yeah. Anyway, enough Jackie worshipping, let's move on.
Well, basically, we've ran through our questions for tonight. Moving on to our plug-in now. For me this week is the usual suspect, podcastandfire.com. /forum, or just stay on the homepage. We've got plenty of reviews, very different kinds of reviews.
My usual plugs plus a little more. SoGoodReviews.com, site finally went up again today. It's been down for a few days. That site extends to MySpace, MySpace.com/SoGoodReviews, and as of a few days back, we now have a YouTube channel that offers up audio video reviews of items that either are on the site already or will be in the short future. So rather than me repeating a potentially long address to YouTube, I'll just let Stu leave a link up in the podcast post. But yeah, do check in on a regular basis. I'll reckon I'll be posting one a week after I get back from my after vacation is over. Now that I have a lot of free time, all I can do is post.
And watch films.
Indeed.
Well, I'm going to obviously plug greenfandvd.com. Ninja in Ancient China, which is the only one on sale at the moment on the site, is actually sold out. The site hasn't reflected that yet, but it will do soon. And so if you want to grab some copies, more than one, I would recommend at least three, because, you know, one might get stolen.
I mean, and then there's the post as well. I mean, things go missing in the post all the
time. Yep.
So four copies.
Five.
Yeah.
And those who bought the first batch now can get a new copy with a different cover. Right, Mike?
Yes. Good point,
Kenneth.
Special
editions. Good thinking.
Yes, yeah, so get out there. Especially HMV, because they've shown quite a bit of support in terms of, you know, interest in the title and stuff. So if you're going to buy it, get out to HMV or online and grab yourself a copy now. It's only $9.99. Bargain.
Awesome.
Oh, that's me plugged out.
Okay. Chris?
Okay. If I'm allowed, I would like to plug three sites, if that's okay.
That's definitely
actually,
fine.
Actually, four.
That's the line.
Go on. Who's that dying in the background? Okay, now Mike. The first site I'd like to mention is I don't want to sound like I'm trying to cash out the podcast, but the first site is a site for some seminars that I'm currently teaching. The website address is actionfilmseminars.co.uk. I hope I said that right now. Anyway, yeah, actionfilmseminars.co.uk. And it's basically I'm touring around the country, offering seminars to anybody that's interested, based on my honest experiences working within the English film industry and abroad. And you know, we go through things like choreography, adapting the techniques that you've learned in your regular martial arts class, and how they, you know, need to be adapted and changed to suit the cinema based stuff, and then obviously talking about marketing, you know, developing a website, you know, making a show reel, how to create a CV, how to make contacts, things like that. And you know, they've proved quite popular, and I don't charge an arm and a leg for them either, because it's not my main source of income. You know, I'm a full-time martial arts instructor as well as making the movies, and I'm doing these things, these seminars, more as a hobby as such, because I know when I first started out, you know, all I had to go off was watching movies and then like ringing people like Mike Leader and Bay Logan at like 2 a.m. and stuff like that, you know, and hassling them for information. There was nothing really over here that you could go along and you know, find it has to do. There are a lot of courses that offer qualifications, but they cost a fortune, and you know, you're not guaranteed to get any work from having these qualifications as such. So what I've done is just develop some seminars, you know, go through the basics, the do's and the don'ts, and you know, kind of guide people in the right direction, and then you know, just charge a small fee for it. So that's those. Second website is my website, which is chrisjonesaction.co.uk. People want to go along and click on my show reels and look at my pictures. You know, some people might want to do that. you know, suit yourself.
No flamboyant costumes.
No, oh well, there's some dodgy pictures on there, believe me. Not in that sense, but anyway, moving on. So that's my website, which I do try and keep up to date as often as I can. And there's my school website. Now you're gonna have to bear with me because it's a long address. It's naresbromartialarts.co.uk. Naresbro's got the oddest spelling ever. It's Naresbourough. That was pretty good for me. Which is the town that I live in, and that's my martial arts academy that I teach from. So if anybody's willing to come along and join in the classes, they can come there. I'll leave it there, otherwise it looks like I'm taking advantage. You can always go look at the silencer.co.uk whilst you're at it as well. Buy a copy whilst you're there.
Just
no, buy five copies, you know. We covered it earlier on. Mm-hmm. Postage and, you know,
feeling postman. Yeah. Only after you bought five copies of Ninja Nate in China.
You say that, I have sent 2 copies of a DVD to Ross Boyask that he needs some footage from. And I've sent 2 copies in the last 2 weeks, and neither of them have got to him. So I want to know where they are and who's got them, and why.
Just write podcastonfire.com.
Yeah, just podcastonfire.com. Answers on the back of an envelope, too.
A nephew of some postman is getting a very cheap birthday present.
Yeah.
Oh well, I've been the host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sarland.
Yeah, the ball's on.
Mike.
And we've been joined with
Chris Jones.
And we'll catch you next time. And Mike comes in with the photos. Let me note the time so I could delete this pish.
That is absolutely class. Silver Angel Aaron.
It is class.
Oh, shit.
Well, there's been questions of Aaron Kwok, what he leans towards.
This is our picture.
Not that it matters, but...
This is our show picture. Game over, you win.
Yeah, well, I didn't really want to chat about kind of, you know, whether I think he's gay or not, but I think he probably is.